Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute. Coming at you like a Denver Nuggets double overtime playoff win, we're live here in the Hoban Minute. Bob, I know you were at the game. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
It was a thriller. It was a thriller. A double OT thriller. There is no better clutch performer in the NBA than Dame Lillard from the Portland Trailblazers. And it's a shame that such a superstar makes the playoffs every year, but really doesn't have that much of a chance to win a championship. But it was extraordinarily exciting. First time in history where someone scored 55 points, had 10 assists, and lost the game. Also set a record for three-pointers in a game with 12. So fascinating to be there, exhilarating from front to back. And by the way, excellent to be back with live sports, with mostly filled arenas, with people that are seemingly comfortable. We've talked about this from the beginning, Eric. What's going to happen in a post-COVID world? How fast does normality resume? Well, apparently pretty freaking fast. It's like 0 to 60 in half a second for everybody, or not everybody, for many people. And I'm pleased with all that. And the Nuggets won. They're up 3-2. Hopefully by the time this is prepared, they've gotten onto the second round.
This may just be their year. And it's great timing. You know, we're here on June 2nd, 2021. Summer is really in the air. Things are different here in Colorado today than they were, gosh, even a month or two ago. And we are really starting to feel that sense of community. It's great to see all the Red Rock shows and people getting really excited to get back out there. And of course, we saw something else today that was exciting. It was clearly exciting for the cannabis stocks out there. They surged because Amazon made a twofold announcement concerning marijuana. The first of which is that they will no longer be testing their employees for marijuana use, which is a little bit ironic because of the what we saw from the Biden administration not too long ago. And I know you commented on that in Forbes. But secondarily, Amazon will be putting their public policy group, it will be part of their forward mission to support the MORE Act that is currently sitting before Congress. So, Bob, what the heck are we to make of this?
I've always said this, Eric. We've talked about this a lot. What's the path to federal legalization? And this, what I've always said is you needed to get big business behind it. And big business always needed a reason to get behind it. And that's not a popular sentiment. Much of the cannabis industry is anti-big business. Much of the cannabis industry is anti-big cannabis. But the lobbying efforts at the federal level can only go so far when you're looking at grassroots or cottage industry. And even though the cannabis industry, the dispensary business, if you will, in the United States is large and in the billions of dollars, it still is cottage compared to other industries that are global in scope. So I've always said that once there was a reason for big business to begin supporting the legalization of cannabis, that we would see that move forward. So I think the banking bill, the SAFE banking bill, which I do believe will pass within the next 6 to 11 months, that's the first step. That causes money to build up. That causes other interest, more powerful interest, to go in and to walk into on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. and say, you know what, you should legalize cannabis. And that will be a breath of fresh air, believe it or not, to the politicians who regularly deal with those interest groups. And it's significant. It signifies that mainstream companies are looking to participate in an industry that only a few years ago was seen as a, you know, terrible drug for society, and that it causes people to murder and pillage and things of that. So it's a big sign forward. But what's the motivating reason for Amazon to jump into it? It's the idea that Amazon has mastered delivery, really, really fast delivery, sometimes drone facilitated delivery. What a better company to come in, facilitate the distribution in real time of cannabis in states where delivery is legal than to jump in the game. And this is not the first major company to do so. Uber jumped into the game several weeks ago, not as significant saying we're going to lobby for this, but saying, hey, if marijuana and cannabis delivery is a thing, We're Uber. We deliver a lot of things, food and people. We can probably deliver cannabis pretty well as well. So it's just looking for those reasons. And that piles on top of what we saw Scott's Miracle-Gro in the sort of the ag side of the industry, the fertilizer game. And we saw Constellation Brands from the beverage game, the intoxicating beverage game, get into this business. Once they start to see that there's a direct path that can benefit them, not just, unfortunately, cannabis legalization is the right thing to do. Everything about cannabis has been overblown. It's actually not harmful to society. All of those things are important. That forms a foundation. But the backdrop is what? M-O-N-E-Y, Eric. It comes down to, I see an economic opportunity. I've got great distribution. Legalize it and let us distribute it for you.
Money talks. You note that there is a sentiment in the industry currently, it seems, that big cannabis and these big players, these big conglomerates of the world, the Fortune 100, the Fortune 500, there's almost a sentiment that it couldn't work. They shouldn't be in the industry. They shouldn't get involved. Let's talk about the opportunity for collaboration. If there is opportunity there for the, as you portray it, the cottage industry that exists now, and it is a big industry, but it still pales in comparison to the revenue of these big corporate giants. What does that look like in the future, getting these two pieces of the pie to work together?
Well, at the end of the day, I've always said big cannabis is not something to be feared. And it's really fear that drives that position. There's this, in this idyllic world, in some people's minds, cannabis should be free and everyone should be able to grow it and sell it at their leisure. But unfortunately, that's not the American way. The American way for commercial success requires heavily regulated industries and major players to participate. So I don't know where the fear is based. The market drives commercial decision-making, and consumers know what they want. Alcohol industry is a tired old analogy, but I'm going to use it anyway. There's Budweiser. If I want to drink a beer, I can go drink a Budweiser, a smooth drinking American lager, right? But if I'm someone who really enjoys a high quality beer, I can buy a micro brew, or I can go down to my local brewery and buy a growler of the beer that they made on site and know where all the ingredients are coming from. The market supplies an outlet for all of those consumer demands. Why is cannabis going to be any different? Do we think that small craft dispensaries and craft growers can possibly dominate the day? Or do we think that large-scale commercial grows, as in every other industry, commercial large-scale production tends to dominate? What are we afraid of? Are we afraid that longtime marijuana growers are not going to be able to participate in big cannabis or own a business? Well, maybe they're not equipped to own a business because they were experts at one particular thing, and owning a large-scale business has 20 or 50 specific skill requirements. So I don't know what the fear is based on, but to me, the market will fill all the needs that consumers demand. And consumers demand cottage cannabis, craft cannabis, micro brew, if you will, cannabis. But they also it also demands consistent commercial grade cannabis that might not be attractive to your everyday or more intimate cannabis user. So I ask Eric, what are we afraid of? Why is there such a fear of big cannabis?
Well, and I see an interesting corollary, I guess, to the conversation that we were having around Delta 8, which is people have to make financially motivated decisions. The folks out there who got into Delta 8, they didn't do so because they were actively trying to subvert the FDA, actively trying to synthesize a chemical that may be more related to Delta 9 THC. There was a market for it. And these people with all this biomass, they have to sell it. And in this same vein, it's just this motivational factor. It seems narrow-minded to not look at just historical patterns and trends, look at the wider motivating factors in our country and what drives markets. And I think, you know, you make an apt point too on the consumer side. It's, you know, Budweiser sells a lot more beer than those microbreweries do. And that's reflective of the fact that there is a great deal of people out there who don't want to drink a beer that's 10% alcohol by volume. They want something they can have consistently. They can buy it in any rural place in the United States. And, you know, as cannabis is more widely adopted, and I think as more people begin using cannabis, there's going to be, just like in the beer market that you're saying, there's going to be that segment of the consumer population that wants that really high quality craft product. And then there's going to be a lot of people who maybe they just want to use cannabis every once in a while when they go to a show.
Or they don't know the difference.
Yeah, they're not going to go for the more expensive, super high quality product. They're going to want that consistent product. Maybe, you know, in the same way that we have these associations with just a product you see all over the place. I just want the thing I get everywhere I go. And as you know, we start to see dispensaries in more and more and more locations, we might see consumers who just, they want that consistent product that they're comfortable with. They've used a lot. I think it's just a little bit of a fear, as you say, as this obstacle to just being open to where this originally comes back to the Amazon discussion, which is we absolutely need that kind of lobbying, that kind of support for legalization from these huge companies. That's what's going to really make the folks in Washington get up and take some action here, hopefully sooner rather than later.
In today's society, to be politically impactful, you can't just be quote unquote right on a policy issue or take the high ground. You need to couple that with a powerful interest and the opportunity for commercial activity. That is a fact of life in the United States of America. That's not me saying it. That's not me wishing it. This is my observation of how things work. So when the banking bill does pass and the money begins to line up, absent Amazons of the world going to Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., do we think that that's going to change the complexion of the industry, that the legalization is going to happen much more quickly without groups like Amazon, et cetera? I think that for stability purposes, governments and policymakers are always more comfortable with companies that have exhibited the ability to withstand the test of time, that have resources to do things consistently, and that have complied with regulations. And none of these companies are perfect. Amazon, Wells Fargo, pick a large multinational company, and they've done bad things. They've failed to comply with regulations. They've treated their employees poorly in isolated incidents. My point is, nobody's a choir boy, nobody's a saint, but you do need powerful interests such as Amazon to persuade and to motivate policymakers to make a change. If you were to legalize cannabis tomorrow and there were no Procter & Gamble's or no Coca-Cola's or no Amazons of the world involved, do you think policymakers are going to be comfortable with who's producing the cannabis then? Who's distributing it then? It becomes a bunch of unknown quantities without resources and that are brand new and new to the game, new to a mainstream game that run the industry. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't give policymakers, bureaucrats, any sense of comfort. And they have a sense of comfort dealing with companies that already do something on a large scale at a very high level. And certainly Amazon and Uber fill that void.
I got to highlight just one thing you said in there too, because it just hits such a personal chord. And that is that, you know, today in American politics, we probably can't rely on people to just do the right thing. And I think about all these environmentally forward-thinking people who are looking at carbon credits and carbon offsets and everything in that sustainability sector. And there's a market behind it. It's not just we're taking the carbon out of the atmosphere. It's, could this potentially be another billion-dollar industry around this carbon offset market and growing hemp for carbon offsets? It's not a purely ambivalent, just, gosh, searching for the word here.
Benevolent?
Yeah, benevolent.
Altruistic?
Form of action. Altruistic, exactly. It's motivated by economic incentives and potentially new markets, new unexplored terrain, which in a way, that's the American way, to kind of come back to our Delta 8 conversation. You know, America finds a way, whether it's the farmers, whether it's the businesses, the business owners. The market has always been the driving force here, and the economics behind what's feasible and what isn't feasible kind of dictate and ultimately what is allowed and not allowed and drives those policy decisions.
And Eric, we've talked about this before as well. To realize the maximum benefit of this plant, the cannabis plant, whether it's cannabinoids or fiber or as a building material or any of the other things that you mentioned and that we've talked about at length, to do that, you need it to be driven by major players. That doesn't mean to the exclusion of small players. It just needs to, the path needs to be carved. Think of it this way. If I have to shovel my driveway and I have a shovel, I might be able to shovel with my hand the most perfect carved out driveway free of snow possible. But wouldn't it be a heck of a lot easier if somebody with a plow ran through first and all I had to do was tidy up the outside? That's what's going on in the United States of America with cannabis. And you know what? I think we should invite those plows into the driveway because it makes the job for the smaller people with the shovels, it actually makes it easier.
Well, you found a new analogy, Bob. And I think it's a really good one. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what other big companies kind of follow the trend here, because Amazon is not the first and certainly not going to be the last that throws their support, because these other companies are out there looking at the market opportunity here for these products. And while they might not be as vocal as Amazon was today, they're probably doing some internal positioning that, you know, we'll cover here on the Hoban Minute in the months to come.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.